I've joked on my own podcast, because my first episode I dedicated it to Innes, and I said at the time, like, I've never been so happy to see a penis on a big screen before.
The Still Parents podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.
Welcome along, one and all. This is the Still Parents podcast supported by Global's Make Some Noise. I'm Dan. I'm here as ever with Ryan and Matt from the Lily Mae Foundation. Thank you very much for checking out this show, whether you are here for the first time ever. Why are we doing this? Well, we started it during lockdown, and it's a horrible thing because we're here to talk about the absolute shitstorm that is baby loss and encouraging men to open up about it more. We are here, we focus on the guys a lot, but we're not here exclusively for that. But we just want to encourage that conversation, whether you're joining us remotely or in the studio, which is exactly what our guest is doing tonight. I'll introduce our guest. I would like to give a very warm welcome to Chris Lynch. Hello, Chris Lynch.
Hello, Dan.
How are you, sir? Chris with a K, isn't it?
That's it, yeah.
Fantastic. The dedication of some of our guests recently is phenomenal.
It's mental. Very good.
We're like just on the outskirts of Birmingham. And where have you drove up from to be with us?
A little village called Bulch, spelled B-W-L-C-H, which on the surface, like, no one that, I mean, took me a while to
Bulch.
Be like, Bulch, yeah, which is next Bulch. To Brecon, Bulch.
So it's Welsh as well, so it's got to be at the end, right, isn't it? Exactly. It's got about 15 letters in it, but it doesn't spell the word.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, so where is that? Sorry for my ignorance. Where is that near to in Wales?
It's in between Brecon and Abergavenny.
So where are they near to in terms of places? I'm joking. What made you decide to come all the way up here instead of jumping on? I appreciate you do, because it's better when we have the guest in.
No, I was just saying, Matt, that it's kind of, especially the topic we're talking about, I think if I sat in a room and was dialed in remotely, you know, probably a good chance I'll get emotional talking about what I'm going to talk about. So I'd rather be in the company of you guys who've.
Well, there's a lot that we want to talk to you about, because also, especially with what you know, your profession, and you've got your own podcast, which we'll get into, and obviously the story and everything that you and your family. So you're married?
I am.
To
Kim.
Kim, right? How long have you guys been married?
Oh, geez.
Do you know why? I need to get a little compilation of every time I've asked a guest this question. Because
and just watch as they're like, oh.
The absolute look of dread.
Yeah.
I need to get this shit correct.
Yeah. And Dan just sits there and then leans back.
Exactly. July 2022.
Okay.
22nd or 23rd. It was a Saturday. Can't remember which.
Yeah, I'm going to check the calendar for you.
Yeah, go on. Come on. Kim, if you're listening, give me a day, give or take. You know, I'm pretty damn close.
How did you guys meet? Had you been together long before the wedding?
A nightclub in Aberdeen called Garage at the time. Probably doesn't exist anymore now. Usual sort of place where your feet stick to the floor. Yeah. £5 for 3 apple sours or whatever.
your meat market club, yeah.
Yeah. So that
and
was
an after shop to finish the night.
That was 29th of November 2013, Dan, if you care to know. So that
29th of November, good lad.
Yeah, exactly. So we met in Aberdeen, where I'm from, and moved pretty quick. Moved to London 2014, lived there about 6 or 7 years, and then we had a moment in COVID, like I guess a lot of people did, which was like, right, lifestyle, whatever, get out of London, get out of Dodge, get out of the rat race. So it was either we'll move west to Wales to be closer to Kim's family, or we go back north to Scotland.
Yeah.
So I was in no hurry to go back to Aberdeen. Didn't really have an association necessarily with anywhere else in Scotland. So we decided to move to Wales to where we are now. And that was... I think it was about February, March 2021.
I have to say this because I keep wanting to call you Bradley, not Chris, because I'm thinking, we walked in, I'm like, it's Bradley Cooper. We've got Bradley Cooper in the studio with
us today.
Bradley
Cooper? That's actually a good...
Isn't it?
Telling you something, Chris, I'd take that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm not being funny. Like, he's my man crush.
Oh, is he?
Bradley Cooper. Bradley Cooper. I'd love to be like Bradley Cooper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially, I like you guys even more.
Especially, yeah, especially in The Hangover. Love him in The Hangover. I think
I really want to know Matt's man crushes now.
Denzel Washington.
Is it?
Love Denzel.
Good old Denzel.
Love a bit of Denzel. He's, yeah, love his foot. Yeah, Denzel's like the man.
All right, fantastic. Right. Well, if you could sign Ryan's chest on your way out, that'd be good.
I said Tommy Fleetwood.
Tommy Fleetwood. Again, yeah. Probably the hair, right? Yeah.
The reason I said that I think he looks like Tommy Fleetwood is because obviously Chris has his own golf podcast. He plays golf himself. So I just thought I'll bring it into, rather than you two chums jogging off on in different directions.
Well, Dan didn't even know what he did, despite like the fact that he's got a golf hat on and he's got his gear on. What'd you do?
So yeah, tell us about how you ignore these two numpties for a second. Tell us about how you fill your day.
How do I
ignore them?
How do I fill my day? Well, right now my 9-to-5 job is in HR in banking, and then Golf Yourself Healthy is something I've been doing for just over a year now. I launched it on 18th February last year, which would have been Innes' first birthday. Okay. Just growing it gradually. Like I say, I can say so much more about that throughout the course of this conversation. But I have a four-month-old daughter now, Neris, so I try as much as possible to dedicate as much of my time to her as I can. Because, obviously, given what we've been through, and as I'm sure you guys and all the listeners will relate to, you cherish it even more when you've got a living child, after losing my first. So,
Well, congratulations on Neris, you say, four months old.
Yeah.
How's she sleeping? All right.
She's okay. Yeah. She's doing not too bad. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Golf Yourself Healthy. That is a great brand. I love that.
Thank you.
Let's talk about your story, what you guys went through, and with your son, Innes. And obviously, as we ask every guest on this show, in as much detail as you wish to give, if anyone watching the live stream would like to ask a question, go ahead, talk through your story, please.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. So I guess I'd like to just offer a bit of almost a backstory to Kim and I first trying to have a baby. So... you're asking me how long we've been married. I mean, we got married in July 2022 and started trying for a baby pretty much instantly. And yeah, I think it was September 2022, we discovered that Kim was pregnant. And yeah, it was a little bit of a, it's one of those ones where you're like, yeah, I know we've been trying, but then, positive pregnancy test, you're like, wow, okay. Yeah. And then... Yeah, very, very quickly you get caught up in the mystique of it all, and the optimism and the thinking ahead to what your baby's going to be like and what your family's going to be like with your baby in your life and things. We have the 12-week scan. Generally, things seem okay with that. I'm trying to piece it all together and remember because I can't remember. Well, it was. So then moving ahead to the 20-week scan, then that's obviously the point at which should you choose to, if you want to know, they can tell you if you're having a boy or a girl. I've joked on my own podcast because my first episode I dedicated it to Innes, and I said at the time, I've never been so happy to see a penis on a big screen before.
That's the start of the thing. That's the clip.
The legs open and the crown jewels are there, and you're thinking, "Yeah, beauty."
It's true though. I've got a lot of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So, I can't help myself.
I love it.
But
love
If you can imagine that moment of ecstasy happens, and then within sort of seconds or minutes, you can see the sonographer is kind of, there's something she spotted and she's not particularly sure, or there's a look of concern that comes over the face. And she basically said, look, I'm not, this is how I remember it, I'm not getting a good reading on his heart. The way he's lying or something, I need to bring you back in. So I think we came back in a couple of weeks later, which we've kind of since learned what they did identify. They probably waited slightly too long to almost bring us back in to do another check on it. Anyway, we go back in, this is about 22 weeks roughly gestation. And if you can imagine, it's like, okay, we're, despite having been given a slight cause for concern, we're still going to go, we chose to go and tell everyone, oh, we're having a boy, and it's really positive and everything.
Yeah. You're running around telling everyone he's got a penis.
Yeah, exactly. I've seen it. Yeah. I've seen it with my own eyes. Yeah, exactly. All the important details people needed to know. And we then go back in, and it's the same sonographer, and she's concerned clearly, but isn't in a position to necessarily. I can't remember exactly what she pointed out, but essentially, there was a certain part to his heart that just wasn't. It seemed very small, and she knew enough to see that that wasn't checking out, and that she needed to send us to a specialist. Now, bear in mind, we live in fairly rural Wales, where these are not specialised sonographers necessarily. So they sent us up to the big hospital in Cardiff.
How long is that from you?
About an hour. Okay. Hour and a bit, right? So then you go in there and we see a cardiologist and so you go in and, remember it, this part of it, remember it in gory detail as if it were yesterday. So we go into this room and you've got the cardiologist, we've got the sonographer there as well, who's come up from our rural hospital almost from a learning standpoint, because she needs to be able to, for her own learning. I do understand that, but you've got her, and it felt like the world and their dog were in there, basically loads of people in a small room. And given what we found out at the end of that scan, it kind of makes it a bit more, even more traumatic than it already was. The cardiologist does the, because it's the heart they've identified is really the issue. So the words that we didn't want to hear were pulmonary atresia. My wife had done loads of research in the run-up to this, and we'd talked about it together, and we knew that if he had that, which was a possibility given the things that we knew up to that point, that could be really quite serious.
Right.
It was even more serious than we could have possibly realised or wished or hoped for, if you know what I mean. So then we come out that room, and you know what it's like in hospitals. You go into these completely soulless rooms, and you go into the one next door, and he sits down and he says, there's something going on with your baby's heart, and it's major. And he starts drawing this diagram, and basically transpired that Innes had 3 major congenital heart defects. He had a hole in his heart. He had what's called a VSD, a ventricular septal defect, and MAPCAs, which are these tiny little arteries that shouldn't be there in a healthy heart, and they're pumping blood in all sorts of different directions. And more or less what he said to us was, look, I can tell you now that even if there's anything we can do for this baby, he's going to need multiple surgical interventions throughout his life. There's no real repair to this. He might get through operation one. If he does, he might not get through number two. And you're just getting absolutely deluged, hammered with all this information. So he talks you through how, if you wish to proceed with this pregnancy, this is what we're going to have to do, and this is the order in which it's going to have to happen. Mm. But then also, and this was the critical thing, by this point we're at like 23 weeks plus 2 days or something, and you guys will probably know, and others listening will probably know, that in the UK, when you hit that 24-week number, if you go beyond that and were to terminate the pregnancy, then that gets legally harder to do, essentially. So it's like you're getting hit with all of this. Oh, and by the way, you kind of need to make a call on this, like literally within 24, 48 hours. I'll come straight out with it. I'll come to this in a minute. We go home from that, and I have to say, I don't think I've ever felt so numb in all my life. Like, my wife Kim sort of looked at me at the time and has said multiple times since, she's like, I've never seen you like that. Literally, it's like I was staring into space. Just nothing registered. Well, it was registering, but it wasn't, if you know what I mean. And you just because this is such a loved baby, a wanted baby, and you're desperate for him to make it, but then all the odds are stacked against you from what you're being told. And then there is an excellent, albeit very heartbreaking piece of, there's a resource out there publicly available through the British Heart Foundation.
Okay.
Which tells you about these heart defects that he had. And word for word, it basically says, if your baby has one of these things, the outlook's all right. If it's got two, tricky. If it's got all three, it's almost impossible to treat. Wow. So you're like, right, well, that for me decided it in a way, because it was like...
Because you've doing that journey back.
Yeah.
And we say just an hour and a bit. And you mentioned about Kim, your wife, saying that you just, how she observed you. Because can you remember your first discussions about what steps to take? Or, because like you said, it's the amount of guests we've had on have called, the outer body experience, that feeling of just, A, do you even believe it? And then you wake up, quite often again, when you wake up the next morning, before your brain's all like logged back in for the day. And then we remember, those first, and whatever you do or don't want to talk about, it's completely up to you. But your memories of that drive back and the conversations, if you can, that you were having with Kim. Because obviously one part we talk about on this podcast as well is those, the emotional level of it, the mental side of things and how you support each other during the toughest moment of your life.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I think I certainly remember, coming out of that room and sitting outside and in the sort of the garden area of the hospital and stuff and just... absolute devastation combined with it's incredible how when you look back on that, you've just been hit with the worst possible news. Can I swear?
Yes. Absolutely, man. Yeah, of course.
Absolute shit sandwich, basically, right? You're kind of, it's not even that because that suggests there's like some positive, but it's almost like you've been stripped of all hope, basically. There's an absolute glimmer of hope where you kind of say, so obviously I think we felt that time pressure in a way, because like I say, we're at 23 weeks plus 2 days or 24 weeks plus 4 days. So there's a time pressure, which although they're trying to say to you, don't feel pressured, because even if you decide for TFMR after this point, it could still happen, but we just need to make you aware that if you want to make this a straightforward process, if you know what I mean, you kind of have to decide now. So, trying to come to terms with all of that, think rationally and go through it, but you find it within yourself somehow to do it. And obviously there's plenty of tears and heart-wrenching moments, but I think my prevailing memory of that time was somehow we found it within ourselves to be, it sounds terrible in a way, but almost like pragmatic and logical about the whole thing, because you have to somehow.
The brain's an amazing thing, isn't it? The way we rationalize things.
You come across as being somebody that's maybe a glass half full rather than a glass half empty.
I was just thinking that.
And where you were saying that even though you have that tiny glimmer of hope or that little bit that you can hold on to, it very much depends on what sort of person you are when it comes across to the fight or flight, doesn't it? And if you're a person that is a glass half full, then 100%. That tiny, tiny little bit is the bit that you can grip onto and everything's going to be great. I know for me, I'm more a glass half empty. And for me, it's I catastrophize things very quickly.
You're absolutely, you've got the reading spot on, Ryan. That's me down to a T. And yeah, maybe that's a deliberate golf pun that I've just thrown in there. But maybe it wasn't. But because it's interesting that, because in a way, so my Kim, my wife, I think very helpfully, what she was the one of the two of us in that situation, where generally her approach is be very informed, very thorough, and know the whole lie of the land. I find that difficult sometimes, because it's one of those ones where we live in an age now where like you can diagnose things on Google and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But to be fair, I'm glad that she did that, because at least then when we went in and he goes pulmonary atresia and all these things start coming out, I've got a sense already of how serious that is.
Yeah.
Because actually, as you say, given my nature, if I didn't know some of that stuff, I would have been even more likely to be like, we can do this. And, yeah. And it's so interesting you saying this, because my response to it was, in the moment, I was like, we're going to do this. We're going to pull through. We're going to give him a chance. But again, to my point about being a realist, it's when I read that British Heart Foundation stuff and I read the word impossible, that was about as close as I could get to closure, if you like. Believe me when I say, and again, there'll be people listening maybe who have been through termination for medical reasons, that is brutal. Like the process you have to go through to...
Yeah.
And that, to be fair, I think is the thing, the part of it in its entirety that caused the most trauma. So I guess I would want... You know, because I still live with a quite a bit of shame about, like...
shame or guilt?
A bit of both, yeah. Maybe, I think.
It comes up a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I was keen to know about that, I guess, in your experience of you know, guests that you've had or generally around TFMR, because it's one of those ones where the baby loss in its entirety is one of these subjects where it has a certain... taboo around it or whatever the word is, but with TFMR especially, it's living with the knowledge that you've had to end that baby's life, basically, you know, and you wear that. Now, despite knowing that, like, it was for medical reasons and it was, you know, given everything I've said, you have to live with that for the rest of your life, you know?
I think it comes back to... I think it comes back to, as parents, we are all parents here, and it all comes back to protecting your children.
Mm.
And the fact is that all of us in this room, I know with the physical children we've got here, would do anything they needed to do to protect their children, right? So when it comes to this kind of decision, it's the worst rock and hard place, in a sense of,
yeah,
like you don't want to make the decision, but you're also making a decision because you think you're probably going to protect your child later in life, as if you get to a point of them being born, because ultimately and I've never been in the situation, right, but I've worked with quite a few people now on a one-to-one basis who have been in that position.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is that you knew really, both of you knew really deep down that Ines wasn't going to have any kind of life, right?
Yep.
But how do you make that decision? It's one area that when I work with clients, obviously I work with an empathizer, but yeah, we have to work really, and I don't know what that right, but you have to work really hard on the psychological side with them, because... could it have been different?
There was a couple of things I was going to say. I just wanted to add a little bit of meat to the bone just for the listeners who don't understand what pulmonary atresia is.
Yeah,
and please. That is basically that the pulmonary valve within the pulmonary vein from the heart to the lungs is just not formed, and it's completely closed. Yeah. Therefore, the blood can't travel through. The way the heart works, you have your blood that goes out to the body, then you have your blood that goes out to your lungs, and it's called a double circulatory pump. I know this because I did my degree in it. Is that so? And basically, the valve within the pulmonary vein or artery—I can't remember which one it is—is basically just non-formed. It's just completely closed.
It was absolutely tiny in his case.
So basically that just basically means that the deoxygenated blood isn't traveling into the lungs to become oxygenated to then go around the body, basically.
Yeah.
That is basically the meat on the bones, if you like. Yeah, so for the listeners who wanted to know what that was, that's basically what it is.
No, that's great. I mean, you explained that way better than I'd ever be able to, so I appreciate that, Ryan. You asked me, Dan, is it guilt as much as it's shame? Now, it's interesting. See, on that, The guilt, yes, that comes from a place of, me feeling guilty about myself, the what we've done, you know, if you like. The shame comes from what will other people think of me. That's where shame is rooted in. I think, like, worrying about what other people think, that's kind of my nature. It has been for a long time. Now, I'm steadily beginning to realize that in this context and in life in general, if we're constantly living in or being allowing ourselves to be dictated by what other people think of us, and we're not really going to make much progress in life.
You know, it's called social media, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, true. Yeah. So I think I've got on that. I've got better with that in time. But something that Matt was saying a minute ago probably leads me then to talking about. We go through the TFMR, but then the experience that we had of him being born was magical, actually, to be honest. It was a beautiful experience. And again, to some that may sound odd to hear that, but I think we were very fortunate that, in the kind of the NHS system that we were in our part of Wales, we kind of moved between various different hospitals according to specialist units here or there or whatever. But one hospital that we went to in particular, a much newer NHS hospital, had a bereavement suite, and it's got a particular, you know, within the kind of maternity ward or whatever it is, that was the room where Kim gave birth to Innes. And we spent probably at least 24 hours, closer to 2 days in there. And they never rushed us out of there. And you create all the memories and, you know, handprints, footprints, and, you know, dressing him. And so, so grateful for that. Because, you know, I think you guys have had people on your podcast and things who have, during the COVID years, some of the almost like inhumane experiences that people have had to deal with, and not even if they wanted to have that experience, because there are others who understandably for their own reasons choose not to go through with that. They almost want the whole thing to be done with as soon as possible. And
it's a great fair point, because of the amount of people, we said during COVID, just being sat in the car.
I can't even begin to imagine that. I mean, if you think how traumatic the whole thing is anyway, and then to not be by your partner's side or whatever, and for the woman to have to go,
Do you know what? I think one of the things that you were saying there, Chris, about the shame side of things is very much the... I completely get that. I completely get the shame thing. And I can't for 1 minute imagine the decision that you've had to make. But I understand fully why you have made that decision. Completely understand fully. I don't think you've got anything to be shameful of, because ultimately, Dan loves that word. Ultimately, as a dad, as a parent, and Kim as well, as a mum, you do what is best for your child. And if your child's quality of life was not going to be a quality of life that was going to see him live for an extended period of time without pain, without surgery, let's just caveat that, without surgery that potentially is not going to work as well at the same time.
Yeah.
And a baby that's going to struggle to breathe or struggle to do anything, to feed, because when you feed, you've still got the breathing. When you put it all into one package, you've had to make the decision, because that was the best decision that you've had to make for your child. And that doesn't make you any less of a... I'm not saying you think this, but that doesn't make you any less of a parent from a shame perspective. And if anybody... I mean, personally, if it was me and people were looking at me and they had shame on me, I'd be fucking kicking off.
I know, right? Yeah, you just chin them.
Because for me, you've made the decision for your child. Yeah. Yeah, and that's what we all do. We all make the decisions that are best for our children.
100%, definitely. And thank you for that, because that is how Kim and I look upon it, ultimately.
While we're on that subject, telling your friends, or, you know, and
let's go down the stereotypical route. Your guy friends.
Yep.
How was that? You know, especially with going on board with what we said about potential. Because one thing that we have to go back again to previous episodes, it's been quite interesting to see, of course, you know, the contrast between some of the guests who say the people they expected to be there in that moment actually were a little bit apprehensive or maybe didn't know, is that elephant in the room? So end up not, you know, and then some people, I think, Matt, as well, I always refer to a story you had with someone in the car park, I think you played football with, and you knew each other, but not that well. And actually, that there was a catalyst for, like, didn't he offer to take you out for a pint or something?
Sudders,
Sudders, that's it. He's named after a washing up liquid.
Yeah.
But, you know, just how your friends were, and how did you open, you know, were you going down this stereotypical, like, I'll just suck it all up, not say anything, or, you know, how open were you? How did they take that, and what were they in return?
Yeah, so I've always been a fairly open book kind of guy, right? Yeah. Heart on sleeve, very much probably an oversharer on the spectrum of sharing stuff.
That's good.
You know, one of the biggest, I mean, there's a few things that we've learned through this whole experience. And one is that It's been the people somehow you would least expect to show up for you that have shown up for us.
It's mad that, isn't it?
We say it so many times.
And do you know what?
Why is that, do we think?
How many times have we heard that? I mean, I've said that. You've said that. I lost friends.
Yeah, I did as well.
I say friends, and I use that loosely. I lost acquaintances, is what I say.
But that's what they were in the end,
because that's what they were in the end. They clearly weren't friends because of the reaction. And
but some people have come from nowhere.
And then I'll tell you now, some of my best friends now are people that I've met since I've lost, since we've lost Lily.
Yeah.
And they're people within the Baby Lost community. But
definitely.
I've also got really good friends that aren't in the Baby Lost community, but just have a clear understanding.
They try. Yeah. That's all I want you to do. Just try, man. Yeah. Like, you know, just try.
You get a message on a birthday
No
one's saying they have to talk about it 24/7.
Nah. You know it then. Matt, you said want them to do is just try.
Well, it's I've said this one before. The one lad who played in goal for us for Lily May Dogs. He's got a first name.
You've got some weird nicknames.
Yeah. Sudders Dogs.
Yeah. Sudders and Dogs.
All of Matt's friends are named after comic book characters from the 50s.
His name is Matt, but like his second name is Dog, and everyone knows he's Dogs, right?
Dogs. Yeah.
And he was one of my ushers at my wedding. When he was one of the people who called me when I was on the way back from the hospital to get stuff to go back once we'd lost Callie. And he couldn't get his head around it. And then he went quiet for a bit. And then I started blogging after we lost Callie. And then he messaged me and said, I need to meet you for a pint. Fine, no worries. Because that's what Dogs lives in a pub, loves his beer. And he messaged me and said, I need to meet you for a pint. And he said, I've read your blog. And he said, I get it. Well, I don't get it, but I've tried to get it. And then on her birthday now.
I like, love that honesty though.
Yeah. Mm. And on her birthday now, he like last year on her birthday, he literally got to about 11 o'clock at night. And he just sent a message saying, I just love you. It's all you need.
Exactly.
Like, it's what you need. Because, it's just little
things.
It
resonated, doesn't it?
There's no big stuff. It's just, like I said, my best mate, Rob, has never done anything spectacular, but he's done everything spectacular.
Yeah. And
that's how I put
it's
it.
It's just being there, isn't it?
Like, right.
Yeah.
Massive. Yeah. And something that Ryan was saying, like, just makes me think, okay, so what we, all four of us, do in terms of, you know, sharing about and talking about these things is that kind of does two things. One, to your point, Ryan, you end up meeting others and making friends that will they get it and they'll truly... Yeah. So that's a real benefit to opening up about this stuff.
Yeah.
And then secondly, it's the obvious one of just helping other people by talking about it. So in both ways, you know, you sort of benefit. I think... With what Matt was saying, this broader theme about people falling short, right? So maybe if I talk about that for a second, because, just trying. Because, you know, I do understand how, you know, there are certain people, whether it's family or friends who I've known for a while, maybe don't, they struggle talking about feelings or anything like that. So then them not asking about it or talking about it almost doesn't surprise me in a way.
Because that's just them.
That's just them. Now, that doesn't make it any less hurtful in a way, especially when you go through something like this, because you're so desperate for them to just try.
You're almost not expecting it from that, that type of character, perhaps.
But the worst of all, I think, is just, like I say, people who you thought were really, really close friends, who just don't turn up at all. Like, you know, I can think of one particular where I sort of share and say, this has happened, and you get a message say, terrible, sorry to hear that, I'll be in touch within the week.
Just platitudes.
And then nothing, you know, and it's...
actions, not words.
Yeah.
Mm. It's certainly the saying, actions speak louder than words.
It's
so true in this... In this experience, because do you know what I find astonishing? We've had some of the most hardened blokes in here as well, in this studio where we've talked to them, and I'm not going to call them out as different people, but we've had some blokes in here that just you would look at and you'd think there's nothing can break these.
Know the one which sticks out. I'm going to name one because it was the boys. Yeah, and also this is back in the very, very early days when we were still on Zoom.
Gary Anderson.
The reformed gangster. I always remember that line that stood out from the... I put the link to it in the description because he said this on the show. So I used to go into pubs and rob drug dealers. He was like the Robin Hood of the Northeast.
And you think about some of the hardened people that we have spoken to, and this breaks anyone.
Yeah.
It's
the hardest thing that they've been through. Like, I've sat in front of people who've met people who've been in the army and gone to and places that aren't. Right. And then I've asked them the question directly, what is harder? This is harder.
Yeah.
Right. That's your line right there, man.
And then we are with the stereotypical male things, isn't it? Yeah.
I look at it now as well, and I don't pity them, the people that I've sort of said bye to, if you like, and that's through my own choice. Mm. I don't pity them in any way, shape, or form, because I think for them it's just they didn't know what to say or what to do at the time, and it doesn't make them bad people. It just means that they weren't the people I needed at that time. Yeah. And then you build your relationship with other people, which is, you know, that's just, I'm happy in the way that I am. But some people need to take a serious look at themselves.
Yeah. I think just for to say it for the sake of balance, but you never know what that other person's going through.
No, right.
That's why I say I don't pity them because
fair enough.
There's a way that, obviously, they couldn't deal with it, and that is the way it is.
But I love that point because it brings me on to something. We're just over 2 years on from losing Innes now, and I realise today more than at any point in the last 2 and a bit years that I've still got a lot of unprocessed anger, grief, which kind of shows itself in a way of I can't stand when people aren't sincere or you're calling out people's bullshit, basically. You know, and it's kind of got me into trouble in work a couple of times in the last few weeks.
Everyone's nodding.
Right.
Oh, really?
So, not only because the me of the past would have sort of been office politics. I know what's going on here. Just let it lie kind of thing. Just go along with it. Whereas now I'm the whole experience has made me go, put everything in perspective. Yep. I'm I feel like I've got the decency to tell you where I stand on something. Yep. So it's your expectation. So, I mean, I don't know what you guys have found in that.
I can tell you now, when I was, I used to teach. Yeah. I'm a teacher put my teeth in.
What English?
It
was Welsh. So I'm a teacher. I was a teacher by trade. And I'd love to name him, but I'm not going to, just because people know he's a wanker anyway. But there was a member of staff that I worked with, and he just had a dislike to me, and I had a dislike to him. But professionally, you'd just get on with your job.
Yeah.
And he basically would do anything he could to screw me over, and then the one day he screwed me over, and it was just one too far. And I was just like, mate, you're a prick. And I never went back. Mm. Simple as that. It's just like, I have not got time for your for your shit. Simple as that.
Can I ask a quick question? Now that you've, because you mentioned this and that difference between how you might have dealt and processed a situation pre-loss and then how you've done it and do it post-loss.
Oh, pre-loss, I'd have smashed his face in.
But do you know...
That's Ryan's answer.
Chris.
So fucking blunt. I fucking love it. I do.
Is there any, which one do you prefer? Like the way that you are now and how it's just very forthright?
We've talked about this quite a lot, haven't we? The two differences.
Yeah, or how before.
What do I prefer? I prefer it now, but I'd prefer that I didn't feel the way I do after doing it, if you know what I mean. Because it still, it riles me up inside a bit. I'm bringing on a confrontation here and I'm going to have to deal with it, sort of thing. And again, going back to other people's inability. So I end up looking like the dick basically in that situation, because then it's almost like the other person doesn't know how to process it or handle it, and it brings
they
me
just
back
weren't
to
expecting well, it from
but
you.
It brings me back to your point about like trying to be empathetic or always go back, what's the other person going through, because if I that's so hard when you're kind of like, yeah, but you feel wronged kind of thing, you know. And I what I'm trying to say is, through this whole experience, I've not lost the ability, but it's harder for me to, because I feel so acutely like, don't you know what I've been through kind of thing? You know, it's like, do you get where I'm going with that?
The levels of natural empathy that you seem to have for other people, worried about their reaction when you've been through something, which is, unless they haven't told you about it yet, it's, you know, ridiculously more traumatic than anything that they will ever go through. But then, that says a lot about you as your person and your character.
Amy and I, we lost a close friend to thyroid cancer a few years back. And we learned an awful lot being around her when she knew it was terminal and she was going through what she was going through, and with her husband and with her children and stuff like that. And it was almost a no shits given attitude. And it was almost like a, I've got my problems, I've got this, I've got that, but I'm not going to palm them off on you because I haven't got time for your bullshit, or I haven't got time for X, Y, and Z. And that's very much stuck with me and Amy. And now Amy's got this thing which she just says now, just let them. That's all she says, just let them. I.e., if they want to be like that, just let them.
Yeah.
Don't let
it's
it bother
true,
you.
Though, isn't it? She's
and it
right.
is. It is completely true. I think the hard thing is, though, if you're somebody that would automatically stand up for whatever it may be in an argument or something, it's very, very difficult to be able to change what you've done for the whole of your life. But actually, there's so much truth behind it. And when Fiona, bless her soul, it was very much a no shits given sort of attitude.
But Dan,
natural instinct, isn't it? And,
you point this out quite a lot, don't you? About we live in a society now that, like, and it is very much social media led, because you do wonder whether you meet these people, whether they'd be this forthright and stuff. But Dan always says, like, we can have a conversation and disagree. You don't have to try and change someone's opinion.
Yeah.
Someone's got an opinion.
When did that change?
Right.
Yeah. I don't agree with you. Right. I must now destroy you.
Right. I will.
Yeah, I don't get it.
I'll bring all these facts, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, fine. Listen, facts are fine.
Yeah.
Right. But I still have my opinion. So it's fine for us to disagree here.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's okay to disagree. I ain't going to think you're a wanker. Well, I do think you're a wanker, but it's fine. But like, the point is that it's the society thing. And I think when it comes to something like what we're talking about here, it can get to a point of, I just haven't got the energy for it.
I think it comes down to ego, doesn't it, a lot?
And the headspace.
Love that, because I think that... Sorry.
No, carry on.
No, it hits the nail on the head there, because I think it's like, right, I've reached a stage in my life now where, yeah, maybe I've got the energy. You know, I've got the energy to give to that thing, but I don't want to give it to that.
Yeah, yeah.
because it takes so much energy away and it's exhausting. You're like,
great point. Yeah.
You know, where am I going to put my energy into instead?
Choose your battles, isn't it?
It's like I've started to realise, you know, like my parents, my dad's 70.
What, the West Bromer shit?
Well, I mean, I knew that since I was like six. I went to my first game and we lost and my dad said, get used to it. That was the first thing he said to me. He's like, cheers, Dad. Brilliant. Thanks for that. So I'm stuck with this. Yeah, you are. But my dad's 79, my mom's 73. They have got their views, right? And it winds Crystal up more than it does me, and that's fine. But I'm like, you know what? They're old now.
Yeah.
They ain't going to... Like, my mom reads the Daily Mail. She's a Daily Mail reader, right? So we know, right, that she's got certain views, fine. It's up to you, right? I ain't going to get into an argument because you're 73, you read the Daily Mail and you think this, like, blah, blah, blah.
Is it your mum who's like top comments?
Like, yeah, probably, yeah, yeah. No, they can't use social media, mate.
The only reason I ever read it now, is never buy the print version.
Just
go on Daily Mail. Just click random article. Because it doesn't matter. By the fourth comment, it's the same comment on any article on the website.
But the
point is that, you know, of course, my parents love them to bits, right? Obviously, but there are certain things that I've learned now.
Yeah.
I ain't going to touch because it's pointless, right? It is.
You're fighting a losing battle, that.
Right.
That's what it is.
But the issue you've got when it comes to this, and as for me anyway, is that I am so passionate about this subject now that I am willing to fight for this subject and stand up for this subject and try and make a difference with this subject because actually it has changed my life in so many ways that I didn't think was possible. And that's where I will call people out on certain bits, like the whole, well, just move on. Ryan's thing, what's your, well, it's just a punch in the face.
It's when people like talk to you and belittle you and it's almost like you're not listening to what I'm saying I'm listening to what you're saying, I just don't agree with you.
And there's nothing wrong with that, is there?
It's the because the conversations I think now, again, I've got a lot of beef with social media, but maybe they're driven by it because it seems more important to be seen as the victor of the conversation rather than actually what am I getting from it and what's it doesn't, again, it doesn't mean I have to agree with you. At least I can understand where you're coming from and what your point of view is and I can acknowledge that.
I just press the clown emoji now.
I think the thing though with social media and stuff like that is it's a very narcissistic way of looking at things, isn't it? Because you can hide behind a picture or a keyboard or something like that. So it's very easy for people, like you say, to get that point scoring and use things against each other.
I think the worst thing with social media was adding the ability to like it, dislike it, all of that.
There's people who we know who sadly just live on the internet to wind other people up, don't they?
Well, totally. But with what you guys have got, like both with like your social media accounts for Lily Mae and Still Parents Podcast, have you had any nasty stuff or like?
I've had people trying to sell tickets to our golf day and dinner dance, saying that they can no longer go, so they need to sell tickets. It's amazing. I've had some right games with them. I've asked them how much they're selling them for, and they say, "Oh, they can email them to me. And can I pay on Revolut and stuff?" I'm like, "Yeah, yeah, of course." You must be an absolute right tit when you realise that you're talking to the organiser, and I've just reported you for scamming.
That's funny.
So we do get nutters on there, yeah.
But nothing like nasty in terms of like, you know, because
nothing like proper vitriol. No.
When we lost Callie, me and Crystal did a TV piece because when we lost her, the BBC was doing a statistics story.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, around kind of the amount of losses in different parts of the country and stuff. And the Midlands was obviously quite high. Mm-hmm. We'd only lost Callie in the June, and we went through the local paper and did a piece with them. Once that, it's like a domino, isn't it? Once you do that, right, we can use these. Yeah. The BBC came to our house. Anyway, did a story on me and Crystal alongside this and they interviewed us about Callie and we put a picture of Callie on the TV and all that, right? And 99% of the comments were wonderful, right? Under this story, once we shared it and once on the main BBC website. And there's this one particular lady who came on and said,
Very sorry for what happened to the couple, but they could have put a trigger warning on about the fact that we saw a dead baby on the telly. I couldn't. First of all, I couldn't believe how thick the comment was, but also like I went on and Chris was like, "No, don't." I was like, "No, I have to say something in this point because again, it's coming back to me defending the subject and all that, right?" And I just said, "The whole headline was about baby loss."
Yeah.
What did you expect? What,
well, there's just a village missing its idiot somewhere.
She carried on trying to argue with me. And in the end, that was an earliest one I had where I was like, you know what? You do you then.
That's
the one where she probably wakes up and gets angry at the clouds. You know, it's that old thing, isn't it?
So reflecting on something else we talked about, though, it's like, so you're asking me, Dan, like what's, you know, how have you kind of gone up, conducted yourself in life? Yeah. I'm a big sharer now. So where that's kind of bit me in the arse a few times, so to speak, since we lost Innes, is it's one of those ones where, like, you know, over the years now, people are better generally talking about mental health and knowing what to say. Yeah. But with this one, like, if, you know, whether it's in work and, you know, I'm very open and I talk about it and you get nothing back because they're like, people just don't know what, cause, and then you're almost like you're exposing yourself what I'm trying to say with that is you have to be really, it's always a judgment call. You've got to do you and do what's right for you. And I've learned to, if I'm going to talk and share about this, I need to be prepared that I've got to sort of lower my expectations or just know that if someone meets me with a really good response, because that's the other thing as well. People can't say right for saying wrong as well with this thing. But anyway, the one thing in particular I want to bring up tonight, now that I have a living child, is it your first?
Right.
Yeah.
That, I mean, my wife and I talk about this a lot and I think, so no is the answer that we give. And we're committed to always saying no. We lost our firstborn. And the sadistic part of me just loves watching the other person go. And I'm like, you squirm, mate.
Yeah. You squirm. Like, you said this, haven't you? Yeah, about the awkwardness of like.
Do you know what? Like, I did something horrible on Lily's birthday. I genuinely felt really bad when I did this as well. So every year for Lily's birthday, we'll go out for dinner. And the kids like to make her a birthday cake and we'd gone for a carvery, a Toby carvery. And they'd taken the birthday cake out the back because obviously they're not going to leave it on the table and everything. And then these two girls, the waitresses, have brought the cake out with just a candle, one candle. And you can see they're standing there and they're thinking, right, whose birthday is it? And they want to obviously sing. And I went, it's all right, she's not here, she's dead.
You literally said
I literally said that to these
that's,
girls.
To laugh. That's Ryan though.
Right. And these girls, I felt as soon as I said it, I thought, Ryan, you're a twat. What are you doing? And
they're these like melted.
Girls, I've never seen a move so fast in my life. Exactly. And the girl came back and I said, I am so sorry. I said, I didn't mean it.
No.
As bluntly as that.
But it was just your world, right?
And I said, I'm so sorry. But do you know what? It's interesting what you were saying there, where you were saying about people saying something back. Or I work off the motto: expect nothing, and you'll never be disappointed.
Was that as a result of like you said, because with Chris, it's almost like the build up of over the, you know.
Oh yeah.
So it's just right, next one's going to. Don't matter who it was. Next one's getting it.
Yeah. But I also think it's the world we live in.
I've
never hidden Callie from the start. We've never hidden Callie from the start. So it is the world. It's almost like it's like a natural conversation.
Do you know why I felt so bad though? I felt so bad because like you could see they were only doing their job. They were coming out just ready to sing Happy Birthday. And
I'm going into work on Sunday. I'm getting paid for this shit. So can imagine what they said about you.
They were only there to sing Happy Birthday. And I just, it probably was just a build up of just like. Pure frustration, like seriously, just go away.
Yeah.
I don't need you at the table. But like I was saying, expect nothing and you'll never, ever be disappointed.
I love that motto.
And so mental health wise, it's taking you onto your golf.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So the moment that Golf Yourself Healthy, just to again, give a bit of the backstory. So I've played golf for a number of years now. particularly got into it when I was living in London, you know, working in a pretty high pressure job, and I would go out either on my own of a weekday evening or with work colleagues or whatever, just hacking around. And it was just more about just getting out and sort of, yeah, it was very good for my mental health. And then I, in my job, I do a lot of like hosting panels, moderating stuff. You know, I work in learning and development. So I had a passion for and a skill for like, presenting.
Yeah.
Passion for golf, very open about mental health and well-being and things. And then I'd had this idea for a while of, why don't I have a podcast? It will be centered around golf, health. And then it's one of those things, right? You know, you have an idea and then you park it like loads of other ideas.
Yeah.
It gathers dust on the shelf.
Yeah. Time like the present and all of that. And get it done.
Totally. And then the trigger event to just actually do it and make it reality was when Innes died. And I'll always remember, again, we're in that ward, you know, within hours of him being born, and I'm sat there thinking, the only thing I know that is going to help me or it's going to lift this intense feeling of grief is to get out by myself on the golf course. So I did that within, you know, a day or two of coming out of the hospital. And, you know, my wife knows by now and has known for a while that's my thing. That's my go-to thing, right? To release the pressure valve. But it was in that moment where it's pretty much when Innes is in my arms and I'm thinking, I need to golf myself healthy here. And I had this notion, I thought, okay, if golf can do this for me, it must be doing that for other people. So I came up with the name Golf Yourself Healthy.
Brilliant.
Love it. And because it kind of does what it says in the tin, right? You know, it kind of explains that golf is good for you, but it also is very much grounded in this belief that, golf is one of these activities, and it's more than just it's more than just a hobby or a sport. It can be, if you allow it to be, it can be quite a spiritual activity, and it just allowed me and allows others to overcome adversity, build resilience. You learn a lot, life skills in golf. So it's great mentally, physically, socially. And so, yeah, I've had this, like I say, I launched it, launched the brand officially on the 18th of February last year, which is, so I took time after Innes's passing to, build up the idea. I went back to work and then I took a sabbatical from my full-time job in January last year. So I launched it in February, and that time out from work has allowed me to get it off the ground and build it. So the podcast is the main offering at the moment. It's just been a brilliant outlet for me. But I've had all manner of different people come on, and everyone has a story in golf. And again, this idea that it's helped them, whether it's to overcome addiction or child loss, sort of bereavement, or all manner of different things. And it's kind of led me to a point now where, a few months ago, I had a guy called Professor Andrew Murray on the podcast, who's like, he's the chief medical advisor to the DP World Tour. He's like the on-site doctor for the Open, and he's the guy, the leading voice on health and well-being in golf. And he's just invited me to Edinburgh at the end of March to come and share my story at the third International Congress on Golf and Health, which sounds very grand. And I'm thinking, I couldn't even believe that existed. But
what's it called again?
The International Congress on Golf and Health.
Wow, yeah.
So to get a breakthrough like that, I guess, has shown me that, because I was saying to you guys before we went on air, like if you look at golf in general and like sort of golf podcasts and golf media, a lot of it majors on like game improvement, talking about the professional game. Did you see Rory McIlroy the other, he won today. But there's not much out there about what does golf do for you? How is it good for your health? And I think it's been very...
So that's your niche within.
Yeah, totally.
I think it's brilliant.
There aren't many better views apart from the first tee of hope until you hit the first ball.
Exactly.
And then that's it. Hope's done.
Yeah, I've snapped a few clubs. Right? Yeah.
But looking down the fairway, honestly, it is. Yeah, it's a view, isn't it, right? Yeah. You're like, I can't miss any of that. And then like...
Not on a pitch and putt, Matt, no.
But our strap line, right, is embrace the rough and cherish the fairway.
There you go.
Because that's grounded again in the belief that as a golfer, right, and I'm not looking at Matt. Notice how I'm looking at Ryan.
Yeah. Rightly so as well, because I walk around with the clubs. That's about it.
Mate, you could use your toes as clubs. You're seeing the size of his toes.
Oh, bless him.
Honestly.
Twiglets.
Yeah, a bag of twiglets.
Like, the ending up in the rough is kind of the place that most golfers don't want to end up in, because it's hard work. Golf itself is hard work, but that's kind of what I love about it. It's like, you know, it's nothing, it's in that idea that in life, nothing worth having comes easily. So when when you find yourself in the shit, basically, learn from it.
Which is what you were in with Innes, losing.
Exactly.
Innes and,
right. So, but then cherishing the fairway is that when you get back out in the short grass, that's really where you want to be.
Yeah.
But you're not going to be, if you're an average golfer, like most of us are, myself included, you'll be back in the rough. But, you know, that's life.
That's life.
You know, so.
It's a roller coaster as well of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How's the reaction to it been, you know, with the, you know, in terms of. Because I think it's such a great idea,
it's really
the name
good.
Of it as well.
Yeah, thank you. It the reaction's been really, really good. I think, again, it's all about, a large part of it is about giving back and giving hope and inspiration to other people. And I have been contacted by people that listen to the podcast or follow on social media, whatever it is, who say, thank you. I had one guy to me say recently, like, this has become a form of therapy to me listening to your podcast. I thought, that's lovely. I ain't no therapist, but that's nice, lovely. Though, but that feels really, really nice. People who have opened up about baby loss, people who generally share about, golf, what it means to them at a very emotional level. And that's that makes it all worthwhile.
But this is Innes' legacy.
It is. 100%.
Right. That's how it's viewed as well, right? Surely.
So something I've not talked about yet is, and that point you just made, a question triggers the thought is, so Innes, we found out in his post-mortem, had De Jour syndrome. So 22q11 deletion syndrome, which it basically happens when chromosome 22q is deleted at the point of conception, right? So we find that out. That is what basically we've understood caused him having these heart defects. And so in our logo, GYH, that there is meant to be a chromosome.
Ah.
Right? So it's like golf tees intertwined.
Yeah.
They take the form of a chromosome. And the idea is that it wasn't deleted. It's not lost. It's out there in the world. And that's in us showing up.
Love that.
That's beautiful, that is.
Love that.
So, you know, and it's synonymous, DNA and chromosomes with health as well.
Yeah.
So, and so, it is, Matt. It's Innes' legacy. And that is crucial to all of us. So on that point, if Innes can't live his life for himself, I'll live it for him, and I'll keep his name. And I, at his funeral, I've still got it written down somewhere. I said that, so Innes in Scottish Gaelic means one choice. And I said that I've got one choice, and my one choice is to honour your name forever. And I'm doing that through Golf Yourself Healthy.
And then some.
Yeah.
You obviously are.
Yeah.
Fucking hell, you're going to make me cry.
No, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. Fair play to you. I've missed a chance to put fairway to you. That's terrible.
But that's decent. Fairway
to you.
My golf puns are as crap as my actual golf, as you can tell, but I've just been trying my hardest to wedge that in for a while.
It's not too late for you for the golf, though. And this is the other thing that we're hoping, right?
Oh, no, it
kind
is.
Of like it is. Is it?
I'll give it a go.
Yeah.
I'll give it a go.
But it's to try and, like, I was saying that to you guys, I'd love to try and, you know, bring golf to almost to the masses. But because, again, if I know it's helped me, it must be able to help other people. And if in time there's a way I can expand Golf Yourself Healthy to, you know, like, again, I won't name him by name, but there's a PGA teaching professional that's not a million miles away from here who's contacted me and said, my partner and I lost our baby boy. And, you know, I think of people like him who have got, like, again, can we build this community where you've got people teaching golf yeah. and getting, because, I mean, Ryan, you were saying, you know, a while back, you take bereaved dads out and stuff. And yeah. so you guys know firsthand, right? Like yeah, what yeah. golf can do. So these are some of the plans or hopes that I've got for it, yeah.
I think it's just so refreshing to see someone who is not long out of their loss. Let's face it, you're not, right? And the fact yeah. that you've gone ahead and really tried to make something so positive out of it so quickly, I think it's amazing. Mm. Genuinely, I do. And I think it's something, again, that needs to happen and needs... All these things are good things. You know, they're all positive things. They're all things that are going to help people.
I think with the way it fits right. in with your character and what we've seen, obviously we, you know, only known you for the time that you've been in the room, but just the way that you go after things, definitely man of action, isn't it?
And I'll now add you into the dads group, since I was meant to do it in July 23.
Not bad.
yeah, Chris got in touch. I was like, yeah, I'll let you know. Yeah,
exactly.
And then I'll
ask to come on your podcast. And when I'm sat in here, I'll remind you. Yeah. Dad's group, mate.
That's chance, you make him feel bad.
That's what I thought. I'd get it in first. Exactly. I need to get it in first.
Written warning tomorrow.
It's in front of my boss. Yeah, exactly.
Before we...
that's what I admitted to him first. I told Ryan early on, I better get this out.
yeah. Before we finish up for this episode, I just wanted to ask you, because obviously you went on and had Neris. Am I saying that name?
Their
name
you right? are, spot on, yeah.
Was that... how long... after your loss of Innes, did you have that conversation? Was it, was, you know, because it wasn't too far, if I'm getting my dates right, it wasn't too long after, was it?
Yeah, actually. So, again, I'm sure this theme and topic has come up before for you guys, but, you know, pregnancy after loss or trying to conceive again after loss, I mean, it's just so fraught, isn't it? Because... I think we were both still very, very desperate to have it, even more so in a way, after you've gone through what you've been through. But then I had this feeling of like, no, but this is Innes's time. We can't possibly do that, because it's like, you know, right. it just didn't yeah. feel right okay. or appropriate yeah. to me. But then I think Neris was born on the, oh my God, I didn't even forget. No, so 13th of November, she was born last year. And so then, yeah, going back to whenever that was, we found out we were pregnant with her. What have you got, like a year and a bit, or roughly a year since Innes had passed? And yeah, I mean, honestly, it's such a mix of feelings, like from again, learning. So we had... is it a chemical pregnancy? They call okay, it yeah, yeah. In between losing Innes yeah. and having Neris. So positive pregnancy test, you know, basically miscarry or whatever happens at 6 weeks.
Yeah.
so again, okay, right, you go again, bloody hell. Mm. Like, you know, and it's, that's the thing as well. Like, one of the biggest learns we've had in all of this is every successful, if that's, you know what I mean, sort of pregnancy, is a miracle in its own way, yeah. you know, because yeah. we've learned and stories we've heard from other people, which is like, you know, trying to conceive, to then carry it through to full term and being a fully healthy baby and everything. I mean, that's it's quite hard, you know, but then the emotion that goes with it, because I think, because again, Matt was reminding me earlier how I think initially we've been talking about doing this recording around the time Neris was due. And I think I said, do you know what, actually?
Yeah, absolutely. But,
you know,
yeah.
because I had to look back on that time, I was like, so much excitement
yeah.
combined with just bricking it yeah. constantly, every day. Because, and that's the thing as well. I became convinced. I was like, until this baby's born and she's alive yeah. and she's well, yeah. I'm not convinced it's
exactly
happening.
How I am.
I'm not convinced yeah. it's happening.
Yeah. One of the reasons why I asked you about this as well was kind of because of that. And
said it, Matt's mentioned it so many times. It's that innocence isn't there. That naivety is gone. It's just fraught, you know, to use your own word, with this is going to happen again or what could go wrong. And a lot of that will maybe boil down to the personality and the characteristics. And again, the cup half full, cup half empty dynamics of the relationship and the individual personality. And so, yeah, up until that moment, and when you just, until you see your child there in your arms, that's the moment. You just relax for a second.
Exactly. And I had this feeling as well that because you guys have picked up on I'm a glass half full kind of person, I partly looked back at the experience with Innes and I felt like I was being punished somehow for being like, and it was like a lesson learned, like you can't be so glass half full because life, you know, and it's almost like that, I think, it was feeding into that whole feeling of not convinced it's happening. Because it was a self-protection mechanism, you know?
It's amazing, isn't it? And that's why I think I want to stress this for people, maybe listening for the first time, because that feeling of isolation, that loneliness there, and obviously it's somewhere that you don't want to be, and it's horrible, really, that you even have to listen or even are listening to this podcast, whether you've lost or you're trying to listen to support someone within your family or a friend that has. But the amount of similar points that get made using your own vernacular and the ways of putting it, because, again, just questioning why, whether it doesn't really matter if you're religious or not, if spiritual or not. Because I remember Matt saying it, and that's why I pointed at you when Chris just said that then, because I remember the way Matt worded it. He goes, I just thought I was being punished for every twatty decision I made when I was a kid so on. And it just, whatever way, again, that your brain is going to try and just find something to grab onto to rationalize and go through your individual version of your thought process.
Yeah, because I was a right knob.
I was.
Still am. Just a knob. Knob with 20 more years experience.
That's right. We're all knobs in here. Right. Apart from Chris. Sorry, that's a bit rude. But yeah.
But I'm
a knob as well.
Yeah, that's all right.
Chris was happy when he saw a knob.
A little bit nice.
Yeah, exactly. I was about to say.
There we go.
Thank you. I was about to do it again, but I was like, I can't do that gag again. So thank you.
Yeah. I'm trying to decide if that's going to be the intro clip or not. There we go.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's always a weird question to ask when we get towards the end of an episode, but how do you feel? I mean, you've been so open. I think you've been fascinating to listen to, and we absolutely think we'll get you back on again at a future date to see how's. Yeah. Is there anything you haven't mentioned you want us to ask you about? Is there anything you want to say before we wrap up? I'm trying to think of a golf pond there, I couldn't get one.
No. It's good. No, I can't think of anything else really, to be honest. So thank you. Just thanks for having me and thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you for coming into the studio.
Before we put out.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it.
Before we put out. That's it. Yeah.
Okay.
Do you want the flagging or out?
I don't know if you're doing innuendos here or golf.
Exactly. He's genuinely freaked out by this.
His face is like lost.
Mostly I'm thinking, how am I going to edit this? That's what listen, Chris, on a serious note, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you here. Also, it's horrible that you've had to be here, but I think the way that you are, I mean, you're just... It's always hard not to sound patronising when you do this, but I think you're brilliant. I really, really find your interest in everything that you've said on this.
Thank you
very much and safe journey back to Wales.
Thank you very much.
Wow. And if you would like to, as we said at the start, if you would like to appear on the podcast at any point, whether it's a full episode or, you know, just for a few minutes, we're here to accommodate you. All details in the description. It's the Still Parents podcast supported by Globals. Make some noise. Chris, all the best. Looking forward to seeing you very soon. Matt and Ryan.
Adios. Thank you very much.
Catch you next time. Take care, everyone.
The Still Parents podcast is proudly supported by Globals. Make some noise. Click details in the description to find out more.